Just before we begin, two things. First of all, I'll make this announcement again next week, but just to get everyone a bit of planning, that in 2 weeks' time, on Thursday the 28th of May, we're going to take a break that week. There won't be a class that week. It's a day just before Shavuot. So actually, it's Erev Yontzis, so we won't have a class that day. But then we'll resume the week after. So that's 2 weeks' time, Thursday the 28th of May. That's a Thursday, yeah, Shavuot is on Friday. Come in. Also, I just thought I'd share with you, Dorothy very kindly shared with me a cute thing she found. We've been talking about men and women and male and female. So it's got nothing to do with today's topic, but I thought it was cute, so I'll share it with you. Apparently, a journalist from a television show was doing a story on gender roles in Kabul, Afghanistan. This was several years before the conflict. So she noted that women would walk about 5 paces behind the men, right, behind the husbands. So apparently recently she returned to Kabul and observed that she noticed that they're still doing that. So she could, despite the overthrow of the Taliban government, they seem to now walk even further back behind their husbands. And they seem to be happy with this old custom. So she decided to approach one of the women and ask her. She said to her, "Why do you now seem happy with an old custom that you tried so desperately to change?" So the woman looked at Ms. Walters straight in the eyes, and without hesitation she said, "Landmines."
Oh, that is great.
Okay. So, thank you, Dorothy. Okay, now for some serious stuff. So far, this is the third week. So far, we've established a few principles. Just to quickly revise and go over the principles that we've established so far. First principle is that the divine design of creation was such that it started off with an energy that was both male and female. Which then God split into two and made two distinct entities, two distinct components, the male force and the female force. The second is that the entire creation, not only people, are divided into male and female. The third was that every person, every individual has a dominant force, a dominant power. Generally speaking, with men, it's the dominant force is male, with women, the dominant force is female, although they both possess. The idea we've been establishing is that both possess both. Both men and women, both male and female, possess both the male and female force, although it might not be the dominant force, but we possess it and we're able to access it when we can. Incidentally, just as a side digression, Kabbalistically, not only are there male and female people, but there are also male and female souls. Right? There are souls that are male, there are souls that are female. And what's interesting is, and this certainly isn't the topic of today, it's a separate discussion, but just to touch on it, we know that Kabbalistically we have this concept called reincarnation. In Hebrew it's called Gilgul, where souls come down to this planet more than once. In fact, most souls do, and the Kabbalists in more recent years explained to us that most of our souls are recycled. They've been here before, and they come here again to fix different things and to do different things that they weren't able to do in previous lifetimes. Not necessarily as a punishment, but sometimes one person, one type of person is not able to accomplish everything, and therefore souls need to come back. But what happens as a result of that is that it does happen that male souls come into women and female souls come into men, which, as I said, is a separate discussion, a very fascinating one, but it does sometimes explain the various components of a person's personality that might not fit the stereotype or the generalization that we're talking about. The fourth concept we established was the definition. And the definition of male and female was that male is the ability to create infinite potential, to create newness, but then it's short-lived and you move on to something else. It's always got to be new. It's always got to be creative, and it's always got to be forceful, infinite, the power of complete new things that have infinite potential. Whereas the female ability, the female force, is that ability to process, to reflect, to cultivate, to nurture, and to make and develop that potential into a full developed being. And that's why we have this, all these different concepts, like the male is more linear, the female is more circular, the male is lightning, female is gravity, the male is more conquering, and women and female is more cultivating. Right? So that's the definitions, the way the principles that we've developed until now. Last week we developed this idea through the area of personal development, and what we said was that on one level it appears that women generally respond to the whole process of self-growth and personal development much more than men do, because personal development is a female process. It's a process of reflection. It's a circular process of constantly reanalyzing, revisiting one's personality, re-acknowledging one's strengths, one's weaknesses. It's not about new information. It's not about news facts. It's not about moving on to the next stage. It's all about staying where you are and cultivating it and really analyzing and reflecting upon it and developing it, right? Which is why it's much more of a female process than a male one. Although critical for males, although they're not all aware of it just yet. But it is a process that is more of a female process. But what we explained, and this is the theme that we're trying to develop, is that for every process and for every experience, you need both male and female. So what we explained is that actually you need a male and a female component of personal development. And that is because sometimes the very strength of personal growth is its weakness. The strength of personal growth is that you're able to stay within, you're able to develop and nurture, but also what that means is sometimes you're not able to break out and to look at a completely new perspective and to bring newness into the process, and that's the male aspect. So you're not, sometimes the female process is unable to bring in the solution. We're more focused on cultivating and understanding the problem, but sometimes it needs a completely new look, a new perspective, a new idea to actually start the process. And therefore, that process of personal development requires both a male and female strength, a male and female force. Today, what we're going to do is look at the area of communication. We've touched upon it, but we want to try and develop this process, this idea of male communication and female communication. Again, not only communication between men and women. This concept of male communication and female communication is very relevant in all relationships. Parents and children, teachers and students, all types of relationships, there's the concept of male communication and female communication, and that's what we're going to try and develop today, and try and develop how we cultivate both. Now, one obvious difference between male and female communication is quantity. No, I don't mean it like that. I mean... that came out wrong. People say that women are better communicators, which is true. Generally speaking, if we generalize, women are better communicators. They express themselves better. They have more detail. They will go into greater depth and greater breadth of what is taking place and what needs to take place. While men, or the male, tend to communicate in monosyllables normally, and sometimes are completely non-responsive, right? Now, it's not just an area of quantity. There is that problem that sometimes you want people, often women want men to express their feelings, to be more communicative, and they're not. You're lucky if you get one word. But it's not just that. It's also that they have a different language. And this is pointed out at length by John Gray in the book of Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. That they speak different languages. It says male and females, men and women actually speak a different language, which means they say the same word, but they mean things completely differently. Right? So, using his analogy of Venusians, however you say it, and Martians, he says the following, right? He says that when they originally got together, they had many problems in their relationships due to communication. But he says now they recognize that they're different. And they're able to solve the problems because one of the secrets is good communication. And what he submits is that good communication means that you need a dictionary, right? You need a decoding system for men and women to understand what is meant by various phrases. And what he submits is that if male and female, if men and women would just understand what is meant when the opposite gender say certain words, that will automatically break down a lot of the tension, it will solve a lot of the conflict, it will remove a lot of the misunderstanding, and that could lead to a much stronger and better relationship. Now what I'm going to submit to you today is that that's true, and we'll give a few examples, but it's much more than that. But before we get to how much more than that, let's just give a couple of examples, right? So one example he gives is, a woman says to her husband, you know, we never go out. So of course, the man becomes very defensive, and he says, that's completely untrue, that's a false accusation, we went out last week. Right? So, as far as he's concerned, that's a lie. If it's a lie, it's an accusation. Not only is it an accusation, it's a false accusation. And of course, that leads to tension. Simple example, but nevertheless very true. And things like that happen, perhaps on more complex levels. Now, it's very simple, based on the definitions that we've given till now. The male communication is based on the malleability of facts, information, new information. Right? Information that wasn't known till now, information that is accurate on a purely technical and factual level. Right? So, from a man's perspective, a sentence like, we never go out, right, is a lie. It's not based on true facts. It's not new information. In fact, it's not even true information. It's inaccurate information. It's taken literally, because that's how male communication works. You say exactly what you mean. It means literally. And therefore, the accusation is we never go out. Never means, as far as the dictionary is concerned, never means never. It never happens. And therefore, it's untrue and it's accusatory. And therefore, it takes exception to it. Whereas the female never meant that to begin with, because female communication is based on the female force, female energy, and the female ability is analysis, it's circular, it's reflective, it's analyzing a situation from different perspectives, it's understanding the subtleties, the nuances of a situation, of an experience. And therefore, it often is combined with and comes together with a lot of emotion, a lot of feeling to the situation. It's not technical at all. It's not factual at all. Right? So, we never go out doesn't mean literally that we've never gone over the threshold of the door together. Right? That's not what it means. It means, of course, we've gone. What it means is, we go out sometimes, but not often enough. It means we don't spend enough quality time together. It means a compliment. It means actually I like going out with you, and I like spending time with you, and maybe you'd like to consider doing it today. It means a whole bunch of different things, all analyzing and coming out of that one sentence, we never go out. It doesn't mean literal translation. Okay. But that's hard for a man, that's hard for male to receive that, because the men just want to express new information. That's what male communication is about. Right? It's new info. You see, that's why men are always so quiet, because if they've got nothing new to say, as we'll soon explain, they don't say it. If there was something that we all, if we have something that, if something that we kind of knew before, it could be reprocessed and it could be understood a bit differently, but the basic idea, the basic spark was already invented, right? The basic spark was already created. There's no need to recreate it. It's there already. Right? Which is why men handle stress very differently, and we'll soon get to that. Right? But if it's already been created, then that's it. That's what male communication is. It's always information that I think the person I'm talking to didn't know it till now, had no idea, or I didn't know it till now. It's a new concept, and we blurt it out very quickly, very, very, very briefly, and that's it. And then we're on to the next thing. Right? Whereas women can take information that was already known and rehash it. Only, not because... No, not rehash it in the same way. Reprocess, correct, that's right. I just used the nod. I thought it was safe once somebody else used it. Reprocess it understand it, put feeling into it, analyze it, and develop it. And it's totally different types of communication. So that goes back to the very, very essence of the definition. The very essence of the definition is that a man has to create new potential, a new spark, otherwise he's not there. A woman has to process, and therefore you have feelings together with the information. So his theory is, and therefore it's a different language, the same words, but different language. Because if I hear something, if a male hears something, he hears it from a male perspective, and completely distorts it and misunderstands it, because it was never meant to mean that, and therefore it's the same words, but a different language essentially. And therefore, John Gray's theory is that if we learn to understand the language, right, there'd be much more less conflict. Because things would be taken the right way. So if a male understood the language of a female, at least he'd understand what is being said. He would then translate it into the facts and the information. He would translate it into technical language for him to understand, and there'd be much less conflict. You know, another example, that they say that, I don't know, maybe you've come to this true enough, but they say that the number one complaint in relationships is that women say, "I don't feel heard." That's what they say. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's... I don't feel heard. I don't feel listened to. Right? The problem is that when people say that, right, that in itself, that complaint itself is misunderstood. Right? Because normally that is spoken, if that is said by women, that is spoken in female language and completely misunderstood. Right? Because again, you know, I keep on saying this, it's all generalizations. I don't mean the specific. I'm not trying to generalize, right? But what it means in female language, when a woman says, "I don't feel heard," she doesn't mean that the audio waves haven't reached your ears, right? You actually haven't heard what I said. That's not what it means. What she means is, I don't feel completely understood. I know you heard what I said, and you can repeat the words, but I don't feel completely understood. I don't feel you really understand what I really meant to say. I want you to show me that you really understand. I want you to demonstrate that you can actually process what I'm saying. That's what the words "I don't feel heard" means. The man, of course, he has no idea what he's talking about. He takes it literally. What do you mean I never heard? If you want, I'll repeat you everything you said from last week. Almost. Right? You know, for those who know a little bit of Yiddish, my father used to say this to me also. In Yiddish, there's two words for listening, which actually, in English, you don't have that. In Yiddish, when you say to someone, "I hear what you say," it's "Hear Vadizok." "Hear" means to hear, right? So I remember my father always used to say this to me. He used to ask me, "Do you hear?" I would say to him, I've often talked to him in Yiddish, I would say, "Hear, I hear." He says, "Yeah, but do you dare hear?" There's a word in Yiddish called "dare hear." "Dare" means, have you internalized, understood, processed really properly, right? Not just heard the words. Heard the words not good enough. You need to, right? See, a reverse example goes like this, right? We talked about men being silent. So John Gray talks a lot about this, about men going into their cave, the figurative cave. Very often, the response to stress or the response to a bad day is very, very different between men and women, right? And it has a lot to do with male and female communication. Husband comes home, man comes home, "How was your day?" "Terrible." "What's wrong?" "Nothing much." "Want to talk about it?" "No, we'll be okay." And he retreats. Men retreat. They become very withdrawn, very non-responsive, even more than normal, which is pretty bad. Very not willing to talk. And to the point where sometimes if at that point you try and get them to talk, it's actually a disaster. It backfires, become agitated, stressed out. They just want to be in a cave. Right? The problem is, now that we have the reverse problem, that's also a language. Silence is also a language. It's a male language in that degree. Silence is also a female language, by the way, but sometimes with females, silence actually means you're listening. With men, it just means they're withdrawing, right? But it's also a language that is very often misunderstood. Sometimes when men become very silent, women fear the worst. They sometimes feel, "Oh, you don't want to talk to me, so you're rejecting me. What's the next stage going to be? Are you going to storm out? Are you going to leave me? I don't know. Right? There's the complete misunderstanding of what it means. Because very often the female cannot understand, how could it possibly be that you don't want to discuss the problem. So it must be me. If you don't want to discuss the problem with me, probably because you don't feel that I'll listen to you, you don't feel I understand, you don't feel you can communicate with me. So it's completely misunderstood. Whereas very, very often, the male silence is something completely different. Male silence is, I've got nothing new to say. I haven't found the solution. Understand? I can't fix it, so I'm not going to talk about it. If I come back at the end of the day and I had a really, really bad day, if I don't have the solution, I'm not talking about it. Because what's the point of talking if I can't create something new? Just to tell you about my day, the day was bad already. It existed already. Why should I talk about it? It's very bad, very unhealthy, by the way. But right? But what's the point in talking about it if there's no way to fix it? If there's no solution, if there's no newness? Because we'll see that it is unhealthy because negative feelings need to be processed. It requires a solution, but also requires processing. It requires understanding the problem, it requires diagnosis, it requires the Talmud says, I'm sure I've mentioned this previously, that Yediyah Tamaka Chatzi Rufuah, which means when you diagnose a disease, it's half the cure. Right? And very often the problem is that people look for quick solutions without actually fully understanding and processing the problem, number one. And number two, it's important to offload. There's a verse that says that if a person is worried, there are two things you need to do. But those two things are connected. Two things you need to do is you need to communicate to someone else, you need to offload. You also need to remove it from your whole personality. Harboring, because when people are silent, doesn't mean it's gone away, right? By all means. When people are silent, when people keep quiet, when people hold it in and become very withdrawn, all it means is that they are cooking it inside. Right? And when it cooks inside, it's very, very unhealthy. Resentment builds up, anger builds up, unhealthy emotions build up. And very often the only way to get rid of it is actually to communicate it, to talk about it with someone else. Right? And therefore, being silent and going into the cave and retreating and withdrawing is not a good thing. But it's just the male form of communication, because the male cannot communicate because he doesn't have anything new to say, so therefore he doesn't communicate. But it could be misunderstood. And sometimes the silence itself, right? The silence itself brings resentment. Because a man not talking, not because he's upset with his wife or upset with his partner or whatever the case is, but a man not talking is not a form of rejection. It's his way of dealing with it. It's his way of communicating. I cannot communicate unless I have something new to say. But very often, a woman doesn't understand that, and therefore it's taken as a rejection, and that itself could be resentment. So we have on both ends of the male and female, we have communication issues, which are different languages, and often misunderstood by the other. So therefore, again, John Gray's theory is that at least if we can get to the stage where males and females understood the language and could decode the statements or the non-statements of the other opposite gender, there'd be a lot less friction, a lot less tension, because at least they'd be understood. That's step one.
So can I just ask, when men are in their cave, are they kind of working through it, or they're kind of pushing it away and ignoring it because they can't solutionize it?
Usually ignoring it, correct. Yeah. Not ignoring it to the point where it doesn't bother them. They're moping over it. They're harboring it, but not dealing with it, which is bad. Right? Not always. Sometimes it's a way of dealing with it. But it, so even if you're dealing with it, it's not healthy, because sometimes, you know, you need a team to deal with problems. People can do things alone. That's the bottom line, and that's a big issue. You need help. We all need help from other people. We all need different perspectives. We all need different input from other people, right? And we all need to communicate. It's a way of processing. That's why God designed us. We are called. I'm sure I've gone through this before. The world is divided into four parts. The inanimate, the vegetation, the animal kingdom, and the human being. And in Hebrew, the human being is described as the middaber, the communicator, the talker. Right? Not to talk is not good. Not to talk means you're not using the very essence of your definition. To say I can handle this myself, I can process it myself, doesn't work. Processing requires speech. Right? Processing requires speech. You know, I'll tell you an interesting thing. A Kabbalistic concept, just to highlight that idea, too, isn't it? You know that previously we've gone through the 10 powers of the soul, right? You remember that the final power of the soul is called malchus, kingdom, leadership, right? Why? Because a true leader is a good processor. Meaning a leader means you take leadership, the quality of leadership within a person is to implement. In other words, you take emotions, you take love, you take insight from other people, you take everything else, you process it, and you can implement it and pass it on to other things. You know that a leader and that's why the malchus, this concept of kingship, is the feminine side, right? The emotions are male, and that they give, and the female is the processor, is called malchus. Malchus is a feminine concept. But you know that in Hebrew, speech is dibur, speech, right? A leader is called a dabar, same word, right? Because processing and speech are synonymous. Okay, because you cannot process something really without speech. We talk about the whole female power and force is this idea of processing. And that's synonymous with the concept of speech. And that's why men generally are very non-communicative, because they are dominated by the male force, right? But we'll get to that. But what I want to share with you is a strong feeling that I believe that what John Gray is developing here is good but insufficient. In other words, it's a great start to at least understand the language of the other communicator. Because definitely you don't take it personally then, you're not as hurt, you understand it better, and there's less conflict and less tension. But it's not enough to understand the language of another person. You have to learn to speak that language as well. What do I mean? And that's much harder, much harder. You know, we see this with language generally, right? I'm sure everyone in this room has a language or has part of a language that you understand better than you can speak it, right? You say to someone, do you speak Hebrew or do you speak Yiddish or whatever, right? Very often you get the response, I understand it, but I can't speak it. Why do people understand things better than speaking them? So it's very simple, because understanding something means you don't have to initiate it. It's there already, right? It's much more passive. So somewhere you've heard the word, somewhere you've understood its meaning, but it takes a lot less processing in the brain to actually initiate the meaning of that word, right? If I hear it, and I hear it in context, I understand it. Okay? But speaking requires you to initiate something. It requires you to actually create something new in the brain to be able to bring out that word, to retrieve a folder in the brain that is so hidden that is much harder to process, right? So generally speaking, speaking a language, learning to speak a new language is much more difficult than understanding a new language, right? So therefore, in a relationship, in any relationship, right, it's a great start to understand the language of the other person, but it's not enough. Because every relationship actually requires both forms of speech from both people. Both people in any relationship need to speak both languages, the male language and the female language. Let me develop this a little bit. In 2 weeks' time is the festival of Shavuot. Shavuot is when we celebrate the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, the defining moment, the defining experience of the Jewish nation. Dramatic experience. God revealed himself at Mount Sinai, communicated the Ten Commandments. It was one of the most dramatic and unbelievable experiences of the Jewish history, the defining experience of Jewish history. In preparation to the giving of the Torah, God communicated with Moses, with Moshe Rabbeinu, and told him to prepare the Jewish nation. Right? In doing that, there's a very interesting verse, a very interesting pasuk, that goes like this. He said, he told him to communicate both with the men and the women, and he said to him, Ko tomar lebet Yaakov, v'taged livnei Yisrael. Which means as follows. There are two forms, there are two words for communication in Hebrew. One is amira, I put it down on the handout, right? One is dibur, and the other one is amira. Dibur is the language of males. It's the male language. Amira is the female language. Right? What does that mean? In terms of the Torah, in terms of the teachings that God wanted Moses to communicate. He said that the relationship between God and the Jewish people would necessitate both forms of communication. First of all, there had to be dibur. Dibur is male language. Dibur means structured, concise, direct speech. Instruction, very, very instructive. Okay? You've got to tell them this is what they got to do. From A to B. Clear instruction. Say it clearly, concisely, make sure you know what it means, make sure they know what it means, give the instruction properly. Right? You should do this, this is the mitzvah you should perform, this is how you do it, this is how you don't do it, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do. Right? In fact, when God eventually revealed himself at Mount Sinai and communicated the Ten Commandments, the Ten Commandments have a male name. They're called Aseret HaDibrot. Right? Why the Ten Commandments? Why not the Ten Amirot or Mamarot? Why not the term Amira? Because they're very clear. The Ten Commandments are commandments. They're instructions. Don't swear falsely. Honor your mother and father. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. They're clear. They're clear. They're structured. That's a male form of language. Right? So Dibur in any relationship, Dibur means when we communicate in a male form. We give clear instructions, information, facts, things that were not known until now, we say them. But then there's the communication that God said they should use called Amira. Vayomer. We find that form in different forms in the Torah. Amira refers to, as the commentaries explain, Amira means hidden language, cryptic language. Things that can mean different things, that evaluate a feeling. In the commentaries we find very often that body language is referred to as Amira, because body language is the nuance, it's the nuance, it's the feeling, it's the, right? If you want to give someone an instruction, you don't use body language. I mean, you use body language to support your instruction, but you say it clearly, right? You don't beat around the bush. If you want it done, you say it clearly the way it is. But if you want to build a bond, if you want to build a connection, if you want to create a deep relationship, mechanical, technical language is not sufficient. It needs developed language. It needs body language. It needs bonding type of language. It needs language that's loaded with emotion, that's loaded with feeling, to create a bond. And in the relationship between us and God, it was the same thing. God says to Moses, you've got to speak to both men and women and use both forms of communication, because both forms of communication are important. The relationship between me and the Jewish people will require dibur. It's going to require a long list of instructions. The Torah has 613 of these instructions, right? There are a lot of clear and concise, this is what you got to do. But that's not enough. That's not a relationship between us and God. Between us and God, it's not only about the mitzvot, about the mechanical mitzvot. It's also a lot about how we feel and how God feels, and the bond, and the prayer, and the emotion, the emotional connection that we develop between us and God. And that's why the Torah, which was the giving of the Torah, which was the defining experience of the Jewish nation, centered around both forms of communication, both Dibur and Amira. Right? Amira means when you go into detail, when you extrapolate, when you develop, right? Dibur is the facts, the new information. You know, it's an interesting thing, just to go back to the male and female examples. You ever notice, interesting thing about men, that they... I'm actually an exception to this, but I better say that, because I'm going to cover myself. No, but men apparently... No, I'm not an exception to the second part, funnily enough. They're, apparently men can read maps very well, you know? I can't, but I'm not saying it's direction, I don't know, somehow it's a female gene that got mixed in somewhere, but... Right? So they're excellent. You say, where can you go? They'll find it for you in 5 seconds. Have you ever noticed that the same man, you ask him to find something in a room and he can't find it? That I do fit into, by the way. Right? Yeah, exactly. But the same idea. And you say, but it's in front of your nose. Like, how can you not have seen it? It was on the first shelf of the fridge, like right on the left side. How can you say it wasn't there? Right? Or, how come you didn't tell me that we ran out? Like, why aren't we? Okay. Same idea, because men are dibur, right? Men only, if it's a new thing, it's getting from point A to point B, no problem. But if it's just about evaluating what's already there and looking at some detail, we lost. Right? So, everyone needs both, right? Let's develop this a little bit and see how everyone needs both forms of communication. Let's take, for example, a teacher-student relationship. Okay. Now, a teacher-student relationship needs and requires a lot of communication. That is what a teacher-student relationship is all about. It's all about communication. Teaching, right? Now, the teacher-student relationship actually is a relationship that is dominated, and should be dominated, by the way, by male communication. Because it's instruction. Right? You're supposed to teach new information. Right? I mean, if you finish the term and your kid came back from school and you want to know what they learned, and they spent the term sort of bonding and evaluating and understanding the feelings of what they learned, it would be pretty disastrous. You send them to school to learn, right? So no question that teacher-student relationship is a male it's dominated by male communication. The problem is that the success of that relationship requires both, and that's often so forgotten, right? Because the problem is that we do find, and particularly nowadays, where teacher-student relationships have become too mechanical, too instructive, too structured, and there's not enough listening, and there's not enough bonding. Right? In the educational jargon, it's called chalk and talk. Only that chalk is outdated, so I don't know what they call it now. Right? But chalk and talk, where a teacher comes in and instructs. Right? But actually, if you want a student to learn, because the idea, it's dominated by male communication because the objective, the aim, is to communicate new information. But actually the aim is for the child to learn the new information. So if you want that child to learn and to understand and to absorb that new information, there's a lot of processing that has to go on, and you need to facilitate that processing. The teacher needs to facilitate that processing. So the teacher needs to get feedback. The teacher needs to listen, really listen. And really listen is not a very strongly male thing. Because listening doesn't mean hearing. Listening, as we said before, listening means to process. Listening means being in tune with a student's feelings. Right? Understanding that a student has come in from a bad lesson, or from a rainy recess, or from a tough background at home, whatever the case is, and that situation, being in tune with that situation, being intuitive, in other words, really understanding that situation, will impact on how the child learns, and the teacher might need to modify the way they instruct, because they've evaluated, and they've bonded, and they've understood the feelings of the child. But in order to do that, the teacher needs to know how to ask those feeling-type questions. Needs to ask those bonding-type questions. The teacher needs to, before class or after class, when they see the kid in the program, schmooze with the kid, just a bit of circular communication, a bit of female communication, bond together, evaluate a thing, go over something, reprocess something. Right? But often it doesn't take place. Why? Because often teachers, good teachers, are people who are dominated by the male force of communication, whether they're men or women. In other words, they know how to teach, they know how to impart information. But a good teacher means someone who can communicate on both levels. Someone who can actually speak both languages. When they instruct, they can instruct with tremendous clarity, without beating around the bush, without saying things that aren't clear, without being ambiguous, but actually give factual information in a very clear and concise way. But the same teacher can switch off and switch on a different language and can talk female language in order to bond with the child, in order to listen to the child, in order to find the best effective way of getting the information across to that particular teacher. So a teacher must be able to speak both languages, and a teacher needs to get a student to talk both languages as well. Right? You need to get a student to be able to express their feelings, but you need to get a teacher in order to be able, a teacher needs to get a student the ability to express the information properly and to feedback the information. So both need both languages. It's not enough just to understand the other language, both need to learn how to speak other languages.
So on the receiving side, boys or girls kind of better that kind of understanders of
sometimes, yeah. Processing generally is better. It's a very interesting study in general. I don't know how relevant this is to people, how interesting this is, but just very briefly, in educational level, it's very interesting that learning difficulties are more prevalent with boys than with girls. Right? I don't know, and the reason for that is as follows, just to explain that. A learning difficulty does not mean a person has a low IQ. Learning difficulty means a person, a learning disability, a child, and it's very, I mean, right, 10 to 50% of kids have learning difficulties on some level or another. And that doesn't mean they're stupid or anything. But a learning difficulty means that a child can be very, very bright, but they have a processing problem. Right? It's a processing issue. It's not a smart, stupid issue. It's a processing issue. Right? Which is why it's more prevalent by boys than by females, because it's a processing is a female thing. and the females are stronger with the processing. Let's take an example that's probably more relevant to most people here, and that is a parent-child relationship. And this is a very important thing, by the way. Right? On all levels, doesn't matter how old the child is. With parent-child relationships, we have a problem that goes like this. And this is a very common parenting problem. The parenting problem goes like this. Very often, in child-parent relationships, or in parenting relationships, there's either too much male communication, or too little, or too much female communication. And really, you need both. Or, what very often happens is, you've got the father, very often, giving a lot of male communication, and no female communication, and the mother giving a lot of female communication and no male communication. That very often happens. And the disaster of that is that it's not a good balance at all. It just creates complete confusion. Right? You know, someone once asked me, you know, maybe the mother can love and the father can discipline. Well, that's a great way to mess up a kid. Because because they don't understand it like it's different doses coming from different people. All they understand is mixed messages. Complete mixed messages, right? You know, it's very, very interesting that the Torah already recognizes this. Because there's a very interesting, two fascinating verses that deal with honoring parents. One is in the Ten Commandments, which says, honor your father and mother. Kabed et avicha ve't imecha. And one is a pasuk, a verse we had just a few weeks ago, where it says, every person, imo ve'aviv tira'u, should fear, meaning respect, his mother and father. So, the Talmud asks the question, how come when it comes to honoring one's parents, it says father before mother, right? And when it comes to respecting or fearing one's parents, it says mother before father. And the Talmud says, although it's not a generalization for everyone, but it's very common, that the natural disposition of a child is the opposite. Why? Because the natural disposition of a child is, in many children, they're not scared of their mothers. And therefore, very often when a child has a disposition to mistreat a parent, to abuse a parent, that's a strong word, but to step over a parent, it's very often the mother that gets stepped over, right? Right? And the mother has to resort to wait until daddy comes home kind of thing, right? Which is terrible, by the way. Right? Terrible. Right? So very often the parent that gets stepped all over is the mother. But the kid loves the mother, because the mother's the one that gives in, the mother's the one that gives attention, gives love. So the kid will honor, so to speak, honor, which is more an expression of love and bonding, will honor the mother, but not respect the mother as much as the father. So the Torah says, honor your father and your mother. Make sure that that relationship exists with your father as well as your mother. Where it comes to respect, it's the other way around. Very often in many families, the discipline comes from the father, which it shouldn't, only. Right? And therefore, that fear, that respect, so to speak, is much more the father, but not necessarily the child might be scared of the father or might have that outward respect, but doesn't have an inner love for the father as much as the mother. And that's why the Torah says, ish imor, you've got to do it with your mother as well. In other words, both have to be with both. So the Torah takes the natural disposition and says, don't forget about the other one. Yep.
Does it change with
female
children?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm talking about more in general terms and what happens. Yeah. Normally pretty much from birth, you can see. Have a look at the little aggressive kids, they're normally male. Yeah, normally it's pretty early on. Unless you train them differently, but it's pretty early on. So in parenting, this concept is so important. Because to be a successful parent requires equal dose and intensive dose of both male and female communication. Children, on the one hand, need structure. They need clarity, right? It is important for both parents, when they need something, to give a very, very clear instruction. This is new information. This is what I want you to do as of now, right? Children crave for that. They fight it. They test it. But they actually love it, right? Children want. Everyone wants, by the way. Everyone wants clarity. That's why it's true in all relationships. But I'm just giving an extreme example of a parent and child. both father and mother need to learn, need to give a very clear instruction. If you want the child to do something, if you want to teach them a value, if you want to teach them right from wrong, if you want them to behave in certain ways and not to behave in other ways, it needs to be absolutely clear, it needs to be authoritative, it needs to have a beginning and an end, it needs to have eye contact and sit down, there's no wishy-washy, it's got to be linear communication, it's got to be very, very clear. Both father and mother. On the other hand, a parenting model that is, and that's dibur, by the way, that's the thing called dibur, right? That's the Hebrew word for clear male communication. It's got to be assertive, it's got to be forceful. It's got to have that conquest, that conquering sort of tone to it. Not cruel, not evil, not aggressive, but assertive, strong, firm. But a relationship of a parent and a child that is only based on that, that is only based on that male communication, is a disaster. Because there's no love, there's no bond, there's no cultivation of feelings, there's no nurturing of the relationship. And therefore both father and mother need to spend time with children. You need to spend time schmoozing, you need to spend time cultivating, circuit language, just going over stuff that we've gone over 25 million times, but listening, getting feelings, checking into feelings, tapping into what different people are feeling at different times. Because both languages need to be spoken by both parents. So it's not enough to say that in relationships one can understand, it's good enough to understand the language, it's a good start, and it certainly diminishes conflict, but it's not enough. One has to learn to speak both languages. Right? And the same thing, going back now to men and women relationships. It's not enough just to understand the way a man is quiet or what a man says or to understand what a woman says. One needs to speak the same language. You know, we're honest here, right? So one of the times that I always misunderstand the female language is in a line that goes like this, and I still have difficulty with this. I must be honest. When, like, sometimes I don't know the cleaning lady didn't come or cleaning help wasn't available, and my wife will say, "This house is such a mess," and I don't know what she's talking about. That's true. It's not a mess. It's actually quite orderly, and it's quite right. What's that?
Is that a male-female thing?
Certainly is.
I think
yeah.
There's a lot of women and men, that's the vice versa.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of men and women that are male and female and vice versa. But
yeah.
Right? But very often, women talk in phrases that go like that, and it's just not understood by men, because it's not factual. It's got to do with a lot of feeling. It means the house is not as sparkling, it's not as tip-top as it was last week, it doesn't feel as good, right? It's not so comfortable to live in as it was last before the. Oh, it's quite, exactly. I was getting that. It means, like, how come you haven't noticed it? Maybe you get off and give a hand. Ah, right. So that's what I mean when it's not enough just to. That's exactly what I was getting to. That's what I mean when it's not enough just to understand the language. Okay, I'm not so frustrated now. I understand what you mean. The house is a mess. Goodbye. I'm going. What it means is, it would be nice if you thought that way too sometimes. And you also looked around and opened your eyes and actually noticed that it is a... It's not a destruction of the base of Mikdash, but it's not a tornado, but it is not the way it would be. And it would be nice if before you left the house, if you'd actually notice, number one, look at things through female vision, number two, a little bit, and actually do something about it. So I shouldn't have to say, the house is such a mess. Well, that's what relationships all about. Relationships about understanding other person's world, right? Exactly. Relationships is not only about protecting your own peace of mind. It's about actually relating to other people's problems too. Yeah. One second. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, the whole thing is set up, so Hashem has set it up to give two different dialects, so we have to actually.
Ah. Yes.
So we don't even isolate.
Of course, it's a setup, and the reason it's a setup is this, because, yeah. Because for two reasons. Since both modes of language are important, right? So therefore, each one first needs to be highlighted. And that's why God, in the beginning of creation, split the two energies into two, to highlight and to emphasize each one. Otherwise, they become blurry and you wouldn't use either. You'd use a mixture of both. That wouldn't be good. One needs to learn how to use both separately. And that's why there are two dominant forms of language, there are two dominant forces, male and female. And secondly, it is important, we've spoken about this so many times, that it's important for the development of a human being to learn how to enter a different world. That is the uniqueness of a human being. A human being can change, a human being can relate to a different language, a different world, a different reality. That is what makes us unique. So when we relate and we actually learn to speak, not just to understand, but to speak the language of the other, it doesn't mean we need to use that language all the time, right? It's important not to use that language all the time. It's important for male to be male, for female to be female. But at the same time, when we demonstrate that we're able to speak the other language, when we demonstrate we're able to actually enter that other reality, and therefore to support someone else and to relate to another world, that's when we become true human beings, because that's when we really demonstrate the infinite ability of the human being to branch out and to relate. That is the uniqueness of the human being, and that is the uniqueness of relationships, right? And that learning to talk a language goes back to the same thing we said before about a man being silent. It is unhealthy to retreat. It's healthy on some level. That's a male thing. It's healthy, therefore, for the women to learn to understand that, and to understand that silence doesn't mean rejection, but silence sometimes is necessary, and withdrawal. But it's also important for male to learn to communicate. At the same time, it's also important for women in relationships sometimes to be solution-based, right? Women get very, very upset sometimes when they complain about a bad day and the man offers a solution. Now, that's the wrong time to do that, because they weren't looking for solutions. They were looking to nurture and to for them to be appreciated and understood. But sometimes, as we said last week, sometimes just developing the feeling gets you stuck. And therefore, sometimes women also need to learn the language of solution, the language of dibur, not just the language of amira, right? So both... And it's the same thing with, you know, that thing like we don't spend time together. It's also it's like this house is in a mess. It's like crying out for, why don't you notice it? Why don't you speak that language? Why don't you look at it that way sometimes also and be supportive rather than waiting for me to have to ask, right? So both men and women, both male and female, in all relationships, marriage, parent, children, teacher, students, friends for that matter, both need both modes of communication. There needs to be sometimes where it's factual, where it's solution-based, where it's information, where it's newness, and there needs to be the cultivating and the intuitiveness and the reflection and the development of the reality through that nurturing form of communication called amira. So both need both communication. And that's going back to what I said before, that it's not enough just to understand the language of the other. One has to learn to speak both languages. One has to learn to access the less dominant force, the one that you don't have, whether it's the male or the female. So in the coming weeks, we're going to develop this again in other parts of life, in other parts of experiences, to understand the importance of accessing both. Have a great day and a great week.